Well, let's talk about Hairspray. I saw it about a week before it opened, a couple years ago now, 3 years ago or something.
Yeah, it's been quite some time, I know.
You have always thought as a filmmaker in your head, I imagine. Did you have any barriers in your head to envisioning Hairspray on stage?
No, not really. I mean, I guess if anybody had asked me before which one would I have picked, I probably would have picked Crybaby, which is becoming one now, because that was my only real musical with original music and stuff. Hairspray was kind of my dance movie. But I had a meeting with Margot Lyon, one of the main producers right in the beginning, and she had played me, I think, 4 or 5 songs. She gave me a take that Scott Whitman and Mark had written. And it was so perfect and so right on the money that I just really trusted her and believed in it. And I was involved from the very first table reading all through it. And it was a great lesson. I mean, I learned so much about Broadway theater, something I knew almost nothing about. So it began with that, and it ends today after we won the Tony, when every day I resist the urge to wear an ascot.
Yeah. I remember interviews and as the show was getting ready to open, and you just seemed as happy as a clam.
Yeah, no, it was great. It was the only time my mother could say we had fun at your opening without lying.
Right. So Margot Lyon, I know, has been instrumental to getting this through, not to mention
right.
Mark Shaiman and all those people.
Right.
I know you served as a consultant, as well as the source. Any reservations that you're willing to talk about, or any moments when you just thought, oh, no, I don't think so, this scene?
I didn't have. I mean, there were certain things I said that didn't seem authentic to Baltimore, but just minor notes. No, as I've said, from the very beginning, this thing went right. And it's something in the very beginning, I even thought this could be a huge hit, and everybody did, but nobody said it out loud because you were afraid to curse it. And, I mean, we had Marissa at the first table reading. Harvey was there in the beginning. A lot of the actors were there from the very beginning, which is fairly rare, I've learned, in the development of a Broadway property. And somebody said to Margot once in the beginning, you know, all you can do is fuck this up. And that was something that I knew, but nobody did, really. So I don't, you know, it was blessed, whatever those terms are they use, nothing went wrong. And you don't know how many of them you get in life. Maybe only one. Maybe this is the one.
Well, let's hope Crybaby is
yeah,
the second
me too.
One.
Me too. But, you know, with Crybaby, and I've heard the first table reading, and I've heard the music, and I've seen it, and I feel really good about it, too. But it's still, I guess, the first time something happens to you, because Hairspray had been optioned to be a Broadway musical by Scott Rudin, and it never happened. It had been optioned to be a TV sitcom, too, that never happened. I think they did one pilot or something. There was a music video. A lot of other things had supposedly happened with it. But this time, I don't know, I just believed in it right from the beginning. It just felt right this time.
That's funny that nobody would say out loud it's going to be a hit. I
no one did.
Boy,
and even
audience...
Margot, even the producer said that people were throwing money at her to invest. It had never happened before. I mean, it just was very strange. But nobody wanted to say that because, and I agree, it's bad luck. You can't, nobody can say that. It just seems like the kiss of death to say that about anything.
Right. Now, aren't all your film's messages really at heart just as pure and sweet and good-natured as Hairspray?
I think Pink Flamingos is. I think Pink Flamingos is about two outsiders, a family of outsiders that had learned to be a very functional family to themselves, even if that included murder. But at the same time, the villains didn't mind their own business and tried to judge others and were jealous of other people's success and tried to seize it. So the people that feel good about themselves always win in my movie. The people that win in my movies never would win in real life, usually.
Right. But Hairspray's mainstream success, you know, on the increasingly family-friendly Broadway, to me, is like the most subversive shotgun.
Well, it
theater.
Is in a way, because you're seeing, I'm watching families watch two men sing a love song to each other. See, a play that blatantly encourages interracial dating in teenagers. Something that probably today, if there was a dance television on the show, I think you'd still have a problem with a white and black 14-year-old slow dancing together on television. I still think that would be hard to do. Kids don't slow dance anymore. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, well, they sort of grind and do other things.
Yeah, they could do that, right.
Have you seen this company that's out on this particular tour?
Yes, I have.
What can you tell me about the guy playing Edna and the girl playing...
I have not seen the new Edna on this tour. I have not. I have seen Tracy I've seen. But I mean, and I think there's, and I've seen Link, I've seen a lot of them, and there could be a few changes since I last saw it, because I haven't seen it for at least 6 months, probably. Even on Broadway now, I mean, there's some new people in it. You know what's really satisfying to me? That I wrote some parts that have made Ricky Lake a star, made Marissa a star, it's gone on with Carly, and a lot of different people, basically. It's really exciting to me. I mean, we almost have a PLO camp of Tracy's now. We have to find them, train them, feed them, get them to dance, feed them more because they lose weight when they dance. And, you know, for understudies, for road companies, we're going to Vegas now. So it's just amazing to me that something I sat on my bed in my old apartment in Baltimore and thought up has become kind of a business in a way, but one that seems to bring great joy to a lot of people. And I love it that, you know, fat girls are getting to be stars in every city. And I always joke that when it finally comes to the high school productions, well, finally the fat girl and the drag queen will get the part this time. Usually they never do. So I'm proud of that. I'm proud that that families are sitting there watching it together the same way maybe where parents let their kids watch The Simpsons and don't quite realize that maybe they're seeing something a little different than they imagine. But I'm fine for that, because if you can ever get someone to laugh, I think it's the first way to ever make them change their opinions.
Well, I think you've said that before in your books as well, that your films are really happy family melodramas, and it's the society that doesn't get it. It's not you that doesn't get society.
Well, I think society's changed. I think certainly what was thought of as John Waters-esque elements are now in everything. I mean, in comedy, you know, stuff on television and stuff. So basically, I think the American public has changed its sense of humor. It's gotten a little bit darker, a lot more willing to be able to laugh at themselves, which I think is the opposite of sick humor. I think that's healthy humor.
No, it was Female Trouble where Divine was jumping on the trampoline. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which was like a theater. It was like a one-woman theater piece.
That's the one Mark Shaiman says he wants to do for a musical. That came from a real act Divine and I used to do, where in the beginning when we didn't have any money to promote the films, I would travel with them, and I would come out first dressed kind of like a hippie pimp and give like a lecture on nudist camp movies or some kind of genre movies that no one would ever talk about. And then I would introduce the most beautiful woman in the world, Divine. And Divine would come out pushing a shopping cart, throwing dead mackerels into the audience, rip a phone book in half, and then we would have somebody, a fake cop or the cutest hippie in every city that we had a stolen police uniform that we traveled with. He would come on stage and pretend to arrest Divine, and Divine would strangle him to death, and the movie would start.
And that was before you ever made it, any films, right?
No, that was to promote my early movies, like Mondo Trasho and the really early ones. And that was part of, it was a vaudeville act. And I think that gave me sort of training as movies. I still have a one-man show I do all over the country. So it all became part of a humorous way to try to get out there and sell our movies and get people to come see them.
And it worked.
I think it did, yeah.
I liked your comments, and I saw Inside Deep Throat. I was in New York week before last and got to see it on 42nd Street.
Right.
And that's...
42nd Street is Disneyland.
Oh, I know.
It's the exact opposite.
I know, but I saw it at the Lowe's, but seeing it on the same street and seeing the changes was so depressing. Almost.
I know, it is. 42nd Street is depressing. It's like where I left in Baltimore. You know what I mean? It's like Telson Plaza where my mother shops.
Last time you were in Kansas City last year for a ceramics conference?
Yes, I was, with the mud people. That's what they call each other. I learned that. They're in Baltimore now. That same convention is, I think, right now in Baltimore.
Huh. Did you do anything interesting here when you were here?
Yeah, I had a great time. Went to dinners. You know, when you usually are on tour doing this thing, though, you usually, you know, you get there that day, you go to the dinners, you do the speech, and you're gone, kind of. But I did have a good time. I met a lot of people that were fun there, good art world people there, so I had a good time.
So Hairspray is showing no signs of closing at this point. But
no, we're opening a new company in Las Vegas, and it's going to open in a lot of other foreign countries, too.
And one more question, John. You mentioned a minute ago that once Hairspray does close and then high schools can have the rights,
mm-hmm.
that would make the teenage John Waters just not even stand his life to be so happy about that.
Well, no, that to me would be the ultimate great thing when I can infect high schools. You know, get my sense of humor to be, well, the best, and this is really true, and I told them not to really tell me about this because they didn't have the rights, and I didn't want to, you know what I mean, get involved in that. But I was invited, and I didn't go because I didn't want to know about it because they technically, I didn't want to get them in trouble. I was invited to a school of retarded children that did Hairspray the Musical. I would have really liked to see that, and it would have been very moving to me to try to imagine it. And this was last year. So I hope it went well. I couldn't go because by going, I would be legally, you know what I mean? But I keep thinking about it, and I pray that one day they get the rights so I can go back and really see it.
Well, did they film it? I mean, this
no,
is
a... it was to do it as a play, and I think they probably just had the soundtrack album. And I don't know because I don't think by then. Well, maybe the book was out with the script of the play. It might have been. But they did it, and I think it would have been wonderful.
Oh, you've got to find a parent who videotaped it or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I know. I want to. But everybody just said, well, don't tell us about it because we nobody wanted to hassle it. You know what I mean? But at the same time, you really just can't do that. We can't encourage it. Because, but the people that sell the rights to the schools and stuff would freak out. But the idea of it is still so perfect to me. And I mean that in a great way, and I bet it was a joyous evening.
All right. Well, have a safe trip to Mexico.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.